I really do stand in need of your prayers this morning. My mind's been going at least a mile a minute trying to decide how all the things that have been on my mind are going to fit together, and I'm not sure that they are. There's something that I want to talk to you about, but right now it's going about 20 different ways, and we'll just have to see which way it takes. So those of you who are wondering what I'm going to talk about this morning, welcome to the club, so do I. I'm going to trust that my brothers who've been here week in and week out are teaching you the very basics and the fundamentals of the gospel, because I know that's what they do. And so I'm not going to talk specifically about those, although what I am going to talk about deals with all those things. What I'm going to talk to you about this morning is attitude. There's a verse that's real good in Corinthians that we read all the time, we talk about. It's called charity. I'm not going to read that this morning, but it talks about charity is not puffed up, seeketh not its own, all those sorts of things. And I'd like to have you go back and read that in your spare time. I can't remember if it's the 14th or the 15th chapter. But read both of them, it'll be good for you anyway. But what I wanted to talk to you about is things like what we heard this morning in the song about I surrender. What does it mean to surrender? Does it mean that you lay down like a rag doll and let things stomp over the top of you? And I'm going to tell you that that's not what it means with the gospel. What it means is that God has big shoulders. And if you got a problem, give it to Him. Let Him handle it. If you got more than you can handle, then turn it over. Stop worrying. Now, I don't want to offend anybody by this, but stop wearing your trials like a prayer shawl. I'm trying to find a way to say this. It doesn't sound offensive, and I'm not really sure how to do it. Trials are God's way of fashioning us for better things. Okay? So if you have a trial, that means that there's a lesson that you need to learn. Find out what the lesson is and get on with life. Your job is not to enjoy your trial. Your job is to learn from your trials and to enjoy your life. I want to talk to you a little bit about a couple of men. One of them, it says specifically, was a man after God's own heart. The other one doesn't say that, but I believe the case is the same. I'm going to read to you a little section here out of 1 Samuel in the 13th chapter. And this is where the Lord is talking to King Saul. And all I'm going to read is the 14th verse to save a little time here. And this is God speaking directly to King Saul. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. He just told the man who is the king of Israel that he's going to be cut off. And I'd like you to think a little bit about that. How would you feel if the Lord came to you and said, whatever you got going in your life, you're going to lose it because you're not doing your job. You're out of here. I'm going to get somebody else to do the job. In essence, what he did is he fired Saul. You know, and who can fire a king? Only God can. But that's exactly what he did here. The Lord has sought him a man after his own heart. And the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. Very straightforward. Now the man that was found was David. And I'm going to switch over here to 2 Samuel, the 11th chapter. Well, for sake of time, I'm not going to read the 11th chapter, and I'm going to read at least part of the 12th chapter. But I'll talk to you a little bit about what happened here. David was anointed king. He took possession of the palace. He was living there. He had sent the army off to war. He couldn't sleep one night, so he got up and was walking around on his roof. He saw a woman who was taking a bath. And he just couldn't get over how beautiful she was. So what he went and sent for her and had her brought to the palace, and he defiled her. She got pregnant. Her husband was out doing battle. He said, well, I got to figure a way to cover this thing up. So he sent for her husband, brought him home under the pretenses of talking to him, and tried to send him down to his house. He wouldn't go down to his house because while his comrades were still in the battlefield, he didn't feel it was right for him to go sleep with his beautiful wife. And what happened to David? He got angry. He got angry at this man because he was trying to cover up his own sin, and this guy had the audacity to be honorable. And so he sent him back out to the field, and he told him, when you get back out there, I want you to get in the heat of battle, put him in the hottest part of the battle, and when he's right up there, draw away from him so he gets killed. I don't know if you're keeping track yet, but so far we have adultery, we have lying, we have anger or wrath, and now we have murder. And this is a man after God's own heart. So tell me, what was it about David that made him a man after God's own heart? Was it because he never did anything wrong? Did because he did those things make him right? Well, I'm going to read the last verse of the 11th chapter because that's very important. And when the morning was done, or when the morning was past, and that's the morning as in sadness, for those of you who aren't reading along with me, David sent and fetched her to his house, and she became his wife and bare him a son. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. I don't need to say anything more about that. But the Lord did something else. He sent a man named Nathan, who was a prophet, to talk to David. And Nathan, because he was a man of God, knew how to approach the king. And Nathan went to David and he said, there were two men in one city, one rich and the other poor. The rich man had exceeding many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing save one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished up, and it grew up together with him and with his children, and did eat in his own meat and drank of his own cup, and lay in his bosom as and was unto him as a daughter. And there came a traveler unto the rich man, and he spared to take of his own flock and of his own herd to dress for the wayfaring man that was come to him, but took the poor man's lamb and dressed it for the man that was come to him. And David's anger was greatly kindled against the man, and he said unto Nathan, as the Lord liveth, the man that hath done this thing shall surely die. And that's extremely important, because in those days when the king said it, it was done. And even though David didn't yet know it, he had just sentenced himself to death. So this wasn't a light thing here. And he shall restore the lamb fourfold because he did this thing and because he had no pity. And Nathan said to David, Thou art the man. Thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I anointed thee king over Israel, and I delivered thee out of the hand of Saul, and I gave thee thy master's house and thy master's wives into thy bosom, and gave thee the house of Israel and of Judah. And if that had been too little, I would moreover have given thee such and such things. Wherefore hast thou despised the commandment of the Lord to do evil in his sight? Thou hast killed Uriah the Hittite with a sword, and hast taken his wife to be thy life, and hast slain him with the sword of the children of Ammon. He didn't say, well, just because he was killed in battle, it's okay. He says, you did it. It was the same as if the sword had been in your hand. There is no difference. Now therefore the sword shall never depart from thine house, because thou hast despised me and hast taken to wife Uriah, the wife of Uriah the Hittite, to be thy wife. And he went along and I want to read what David's reaction was. And David said unto Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. And Nathan said unto David, The Lord hath put away thy sin, thou shalt not die. Sometimes we think of God as a harsh God, and he didn't let David off the hook. But what he did do is spare the man's life. But I'm going to tell you what I believe. I believe that if David had said anything but what he said, that his life would not have been spared. If he had said, yeah, but she had no business down there being naked, taking a bath where I could see her. Or, yeah, but nobody else told me I shouldn't be doing that. Or, you know, everybody is off at war, and what was I supposed to do? He made no excuses. And I'm going to tell you my opinion. That is why he was a man after God's own heart. When he was faced with his own iniquity, when he was faced with his own weaknesses, he made no excuses. He accepted what he had coming to him. But what the Lord made him bear was pretty tough. He said, your life is spared. The baby's going to die. Seven days later, after David had gone without food and spent all 7 days praying, the child died. And when David heard about it, he got up and he washed his face and he put his clothes on and he went on with his life. He learned his lesson and he went on with his life. He dealt with the problem. And they thought it was really strange. They said, well, you know, aren't you going to mourn for the baby? And what David said is the 22nd verse here in the 12th chapter. And he said, while the child was yet alive, I fasted and wept. For I said, who can tell whether God will be gracious to me that the child may live? But now he is dead. Wherefore should I fast? Can I bring him back again? Shall I go to him? But he shall not return to me. And he went on, and then Bathsheba bore him another son. And the Lord loved him. And his name was Solomon. But that first son died. because that child was conceived in sin. And because David sentenced himself to death, and that God spared David's life, but in a way, he carried out that sentence because the one who would have been king died. So David's words were not null and void. They just had a separate fulfillment. The thing that really got me going on this is a song that many of you may, at least some of you I know, are familiar with, and it's one by Steve and Annie Chapman. And I got the chorus written down here because it speaks to David's attitude, the thing that made him a man after God's own heart. I'm trying to read this thing. I'm going to try to sing it because it makes more sense to me when I sing it. Have mercy on me, O God, according to thy steadfast love, according to thy great compassion, blot out my many transgressions, wash away all my iniquity, cleanse me from sin. Every time I hear that song, it really gets to me. Hope you forgive me for having trouble carrying a tune while I was singing it. But I think that chorus captures the attitude that David had. He accepted his guilt. He accepted his punishment. He picked up the pieces and went on and did the things that the Lord had for him to do. I'm going to read you one more about a man. I want you to turn to the first chapter of Ether. And I'm going to start with the 36th verse. I'm just going to read a few verses here also. Had so much faith that he was taken within the veil, that he saw the things that God showed him. He even saw the finger of God. But I want you to listen to this. And now I proceed with my record, for behold, it came to pass that the Lord did bring Jared and his brethren forth, even to that great sea which divideth the lands. And as they came to the sea, they pitched their tents, and they called the name of the place Moriancomer, and they dwelt in tents. And dwelt in tents upon the seashore for the space of 4 years. And it came to pass at the end of 4 years that the Lord came unto the brother of Jared, and stood in a cloud and talked with him. And for the space of 3 hours did the Lord talk with the brother of Jared, and chastened him because he remembered not to call upon the name of the Lord. I'm going to stop there for a minute. I remember what it was like to get chastised by my dad, and I don't think he ever did it for 3 hours. But just try to think about that. If you had the Lord come to you and chew you out for 3 solid hours. And now I believe this is a man after God's own heart. And I'm going to read to you why here in a minute. But he didn't make any excuses. He didn't say, well, I've been kind of busy. You know, got a lot of tents to pitch and a lot of people to keep track of and things like that. You know, I'm a busy man, Lord. I mean, come on, give me a break. He didn't say anything like that. And I know that there's been days that I've failed to pray and skipped over, but I've never gone 4 years. And it's... The man was a good man, people. He was a righteous man. But he was a man with human weaknesses. And one of his weaknesses was things were going well, so why check in? He didn't have any particular problem he was trying to solve, so he just didn't talk to the Lord. He had to learn the lesson that it doesn't matter whether you got something going on or not. Keep the channels of communication open. Keep saying your prayers. Keep talking all the time. Even when things are going good, keep praying. But listen to his answer. After he spent 3 hours being chastised, the brother of Jared repented of the evil which he had done and did call upon the name of the Lord for his brethren who were with him. And the Lord said unto him, I will forgive thee and thy brethren of their sins, but thou shalt not sin any more, for ye shall remember that my spirit will not always strive with man. Wherefore, if ye will sin until ye are fully ripe, ye shall be cut off from the presence of the Lord. He said, I'm going to forgive you, but I want you to understand, this isn't going to happen again, because I'm not going to put up with it. Which is very much the same thing that he told King David. And history shows that King David never did anything like that again either. He had his problems, but he never did that again. But both of these men had an attitude. And that attitude was when they needed to do something, they did it. They did not have an attitude that said, if it is to be, it's up to God. You know, he'll take care of it. If, you know, whatever needs to be done, he'll handle. I'll just go do whatever I feel like doing. I believe that they had an attitude that said, if it is to be, it's up to me. Because God gave me the job to do. And there's a thing I heard called back that I really like is, and the M in me stands for motivation, and the E in me stands for enthusiasm. Because if me is motivated and enthusiastic, me has to be a success. And that may sound terrible to an English professor, but that's okay. Because if you think about it, what is it that we do? How many of us have friends? I hope that all of us do. Now, why are those people your friends? There's usually a number of characteristics that we get from our friends. And they're not what I'm going to call the three C's. We all know what the three R's are, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic. But there's a three C's. And what the three C's are is complaining, criticizing, and condemning. And how many people like to spend all their time around people who constantly criticize other people, constantly complain about their own situation, and constantly condemn everybody else? Are those the kind of people you want to spend your time around? I know I don't want to spend my time around people like that. When I find people like that, I avoid them like the plague. Because if I start spending time with people like that, pretty soon I'm doing the same thing. I go in and say, boy, it's a great day, isn't it? And they say, well, it always rains on the weekend. And pretty soon you find yourself, no matter how good something's going, you always find something to criticize about it. And that's not what we're supposed to be about. What we ought to do is have three other characteristics that says, instead of complaining, They ought to say things that are uplifting. Now, wouldn't everybody agree that have friends who say things that are uplifting is a good thing to have around? Instead of criticizing, how about if they have encouraging words to say? Wouldn't you say that's kind of a neat thing to have? Somebody who says uplifting things and encourages us when things aren't going so well? And how about instead of condemnation, they forgive? Boy, now there's a neat trick. Think about that. Three characteristics of a friend. Can you think of anybody who exemplified all three of those? I know one. People wonder why people flocked around Jesus. Yeah, there were some curiosity seekers there. But why did people always want to be around him? Because the words that he spoke were uplifting. Because when people were down, he was always encouraging. And because instead of condemning people, he forgave them. The perfect friend. He's our perfect friend. He's the friend that we ought to be emulating. He is the friend to us that we ought to be to other people. You ever think about that? Attitude. Attitude. Something goes wrong, say, that's okay, pick yourself up. Dust yourself off and start over again. You can do this. Just hang in there, keep going. Say, hey, I want to tell you a little story about somebody. And tell them a story about somebody and something that happened that seemed at first to be bad, but they got through it, and on the other side of it, they had a lot of joy. I know sports doesn't have a lot to do with this, but I'm going to talk about sports for a minute anyway. Do you ever think about why some people hit a lot of home runs and other people don't? Say, well, yes, because physical strength. Well, there's a lot of guys who are big, burly guys out there that can't hit the home runs that a small, spindly guy does. And yeah, there's all the physiological things. Well, this guy's more relaxed and he has a better snap in his wrist. But all that stuff follows the fact. The fact is the reason one guy hits him out of the park and the other guy doesn't is because one guy's looking at the fence and the other guy's looking on the other side of the fence. There's another cliche I'm going to give you, and I've given it to you before. Obstacles are what you see when you take your eye off of the goal. No matter what you do in life, there's going to be things that are going to prevent you from getting there if you let them. The way you get there is by understanding where you're going and focus on where you're going, not where you're at, and not what stands between you and where you're going. What did Jesus focus us on? What was his focus? Was his focus, stumbling block, look at the stumbling block, everybody, you know, get your eyes down here, look at that. No. He said, what I want you to focus on is salvation. I want you to focus on spending eternity with your Heavenly Father. Forget about this other stuff, it's not important. Are you going to trip and fall? Yeah, you are. Did you tear a hole in your jeans? So what? Stand up, dust yourself off, and get back, focus on the goal, and keep going. It's called an attitude of success. If you do that, you can't help but succeed, regardless of what endeavor you're succeeding at. If you want to be successful at going to heaven, then keep focused on heaven and keep focused on doing the things that are going to get you to heaven and stop worrying about everything else because it doesn't matter. What's on the television doesn't matter. What's in the newspaper doesn't matter. There's horrible things in this world. And we all have to live through some of them. Hopefully we won't live through the worst of them, but some of us have lived through those too. But those don't make the difference. Those are the things that the adversary of your souls has thrown out there to try to cloud your mind and to get your eye off of the goal. Don't let him do it. Almost everybody has trouble with self-image in believing that they can do something. It seems like it's just a part of human nature that I can fully believe that Alvin can do it, but when it comes to me actually doing it, well, I don't know. I'm not sure I can do that. You know, Alvin can do that, but I'm not sure I can. And the bottom line is that any one of us can do it. And there's always been a thing that's gone around forever. It's called seeing is believing. Brothers and sisters, seeing is not believing. Seeing is knowing. I mean, what is faith? The substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. If you see it, then you don't believe it. You don't have faith in it. You know it. I mean, that very expression is a lie. Seeing is not believing. Seeing is knowing. If you can't believe it before you see it, then you don't have any belief, period. The reason I'm trying to talk about this is because I really want us to be Christians. I want to be a Christian. I want all of you to be a Christian. And a Christian is not someone who professes Christ. A Christian is someone who follows Christ. And there's a big difference there. I'm going to jump back here, see if I can get this thing to fall open in the right place. 1 Timothy, and I'm going to read a few verses here. It's talking about the qualifications for members of the ministry. But those of you who aren't members of the ministry or don't see yourselves ever being a minister or, you know, who are children or who are females, don't just let yourself off the hook on this. I want you to think about the qualities of the individual it's talking about here. This is a true saying. If a man desire the office of a bishop, he desireth a good work. And there's been times that I've heard people say, well, if you desire to be a minister, that's wrong. Well, it's not wrong. If you try to do something to become a minister, other than wait on the Lord to get you there, that's wrong. But desiring it, there's nothing wrong with that at all. But if you desire it, listen to this. A bishop, then, must be blameless. The husband of one wife, vigilant, sober, of good behavior, given to hospitality, apt to teach, not given to wine, no striker, not greedy of filthy lucre, but patient, not a brawler, not covetous, one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. For if a man know not how to rule his own house, how shall he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being lifted up in pride he fall into condemnation of the devil. Moreover, he must have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. And it goes on and talks about some other things there, but it's just talking about some basic qualities. I'm going to go over into Titus in the first chapter. I'm going to read all of that in a little bit. But what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get you to understand the attitude is everything. What is it that makes people focus on the goal instead of the obstacle? Attitude. What is it that makes one person a friend and the other person just kind of a, boy, I really wish I didn't have to go over to their house today? It's attitude. What makes one person a joy to be around and the other person a wet blanket? Attitude. Why is it that some teams win the championship of whatever sport it is and other teams don't? Is it because they got better talent? No. It's because of attitude. It's because they believe they can do it and they're willing to do whatever it takes to get there. Let's see. I'm going to start here with the fifth verse. I'm going to kind of cut off Paul's greeting here. It says, "For this cause I left thee in Crete, that thou shouldst set in order the things that are wanting, and ordain elders in every city, as I had appointed thee. If any be blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of riot or unruly, for a bishop must be blameless, as a steward of God, not self-willed, not soon angry, not given to wine, no striker, not given to filthy lucre, but a lover of hospitality, a lover of good men, sober, just, holy, temperate." And I'm going to focus on temperate a little bit. Not radical. Are there people that come among us that maybe don't do things quite the way we do? The answer is yes. Should we go to them and point out to them that they're not the same? The answer is no. Why would you seek to make somebody uncomfortable here? Isn't this the house of God? Shouldn't everybody be welcome here? If somebody comes in and they have a problem, find something good about them and compliment them. If you talk to them about what they're good at, talk to them about what you admire about them, they'll pick up on that. And yeah, it takes more time than going out there with a double-barreled shotgun and blasting a hole in them saying, well, that's not right. But why aren't we willing to take some time? Be encouraging. They'll pick up on the things about them that people never compliment. And what they'll start doing is they'll start trying to do more of the things that people compliment. If one week they come in, they're dressed in this particular type of manner, and nobody says anything about how they're dressed, and the next week they come in wearing something and everybody tells them how nice it is, they know the difference. You don't have to point it out to them. Each and every one of you yourselves know how you feel when people talk to you. Why would you talk to anybody in a different manner than how you yourself like to be talked to? I mean, we've heard that scriptural quote I don't know how many times. About do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Well, same goes not just for doing, but talking. There's no difference. being a lover of hospitality and a lover of good people, a lover of good men, means to me not being a sad sack. Put a smile on your face. There's a whole world out there full of frowns. Let people who are miserable frown. And if you're miserable, smile. It works. I mean, if you're feeling just totally lousy, you know, the world's got you down and everything's going bad and everything, you just sit there and think in your mind, smile. And if it doesn't work the first time, think it again. Smile. And pretty soon you're smiling. And you know what? You don't feel so bad. Did your circumstances change? No. What changed? Your attitude. You're going to constantly have circumstances in your life that are going to be negative. What you do about them makes all the difference in the world. There's another cliche that I like real well. It's called, the way it goes is, he who is not busy being born is busy dying. It's just a matter of attitude. Most people, by the time they're 21, are dead. They're just waiting for their body to catch up. Why? Because they've taken on this nasty attitude in the world. They get up in the morning and, I got to go to work again. They get in their car and they drive down there and they honk at people and they got their bloodshot eyes and they shake their fists and they swear at them. And it's a difference between the way people choose to be. There's the person that gets in the car accident and they gets out of the accident. And he's swearing at the person that got in the accident with him, and he's swearing at the car because it didn't act right. And he's looking at all the damage, and he's feeling bad. And there's the other person that gets in the exact same type of accident, and he gets out, and he gets down on his knees and says, "Thank you, Lord, I'm still alive. I can go home to my family tonight." Why does he feel that way? Because he knows that that stuff out there in the world is just one series of obstacles after the other. And it doesn't amount to a hill of beans as far as his salvation is concerned. What's important in our lives, brothers and sisters, is people. People are what are important. Not our houses, not our church, not our cars, not the city we live in, not our jobs, none of that. What's important is people. What have you done today to lift up somebody else and make them feel better? Have you done anything yet? If you haven't, get busy. If you have, thanks. Now get busy. Never rest. Our life is set up. I'm going to try to get out of here pretty quick. I'm sorry. Our life is set up as a series of events. And everything that happened to Benny Case from the time he was born till right now, all help me be the kind of person that I am. And that gives me a foundation. But what counts is, what am I going to do from right now on? And if the answer is nothing, then one day I'm going to stand in front of somebody and say, "Well, I had a great foundation." And he's going to say, "Yeah, I gave you some talents. You had a great foundation, and you stood there and you hold them. That wasn't very profitable for me. Why was it that the Lord took the talents from the one who didn't do anything and gave it to the guy who had the most? Because he likes rich people? No. He gave it to the person who had the most ambition, the person who was willing to go out and do whatever it took to please his master. The reason he had more was because he was capable of more. And that shouldn't make anybody feel bad. What we should say is that that gives me determination to get to work. I was going to read to you the prayers over the bread and wine because I think those go along with the attitude too. Well, I'm going to read one of them. You've all heard this at least once a month forever. But I want you to think about something. And what I want you to think about is attitude. What kind of attitude is this prayer? O God, the Eternal Father, we ask Thee, in the name of Thy Son, Jesus Christ, to bless and sanctify this wine to the souls of all those who drink of it, that they may do it in remembrance of the blood of Thy Son, which was shed for them, that they may witness unto Thee, O God, the Eternal Father, that they do always remember Him, that they may have His Spirit to be with them. Amen. That prayer looks forward. It doesn't look back. It doesn't say, well, I thank Thee, O God, that I'm so much better than my brethren and that I do this and that I do that. Nah, doesn't have any of that. It looks forward. It says that we want to remember the sacrifice that Jesus made for us, and we want You to bless us so that we can always have Your Spirit to be with us. Not just for the next hour while we're in this meeting. Always. Looking out forward. Never ending. If I can leave you with anything, I know I've talked a lot this morning, but the thing that I want you to understand, a thing I want you to learn, if I didn't get anything through to you this morning, just one thing I want you to learn, is that every day when you get up, you determine how that day is going. You say, well, no, Benny, I didn't. I didn't think about it at all. Well, by not thinking about it at all, that was a determination. Because when you fail to plan, you plan to fail. People who succeed are not people who never failed. They're people who learned from their failures, got up, and kept on going. Every morning when you get up, if you simply decide right then and there what kind of day this is going to be. And I think that most people, very seldom, I mean, there may be some people out there, and if they are, then I hope they're not any of us, that may get up and say, you know, I'm going to really have a bad day today. Most people don't want to have bad days. They're going to get up in the morning and say, man, I'm going to make this a good day. And sometimes what they do is during the day they forget that they made that decision. They don't keep focused on it. But that's just a simple one-day goal. I'm going to have a good day today. It doesn't matter what happens to me. It doesn't matter what my boss says. It doesn't matter what my wife says. It doesn't matter what the kids do. I'm going to have a good day. Why? Because those are all obstacles. What is the goal? Having a good day. And what are your trials? Your trials are all obstacles. What is the goal? Salvation. Focus on the goal. Keep it in sight. Don't ever forget it. Don't look down. and just keep forging ahead. I guess I could have done a 5-minute sermon. I want you to know that my prayers are always with you. Every time I get here, I look out on these faces and it just really does something for me. And I'm so pleased that you are here. Not because you got to hear me, because Lord knows I make enough mistakes. But because I got to see you. So I'd ask you that you keep Patsy and I in your prayers and our kids. And I want you to have the confidence that you're always in ours. Thanks.